Blog Talk Radio.
This is world champion D.E. Chambers, president of the Amateur Organization of Karate and multi-Greek Award winner. I would like to welcome you to Professor Gary Lee's Parts Unknown radio talk show, featuring news, special announcements, special one-on-one interviews with stars of sport karate. Thank you for listening. Buckle up and enjoy the show.
This program is sponsored by the American Martial Arts Alliance Foundation and Elite Publications. Everyone has a story. You just have to get it out. Visit Elite Publications at www.elitepublications.org.
Well, aloha, everybody. Welcome to our show on a Tuesday night. This is Professor Gary Lee with the Sport Karate Museum Archives and Museum, and we want to welcome you. Well, we want to say thank you for allowing us to come into your home for the past 9 years every Tuesday night. And you know what, guys? Before I introduce my very special guest tonight, I want to bring on my producer. Now, he just came back from Las Vegas. We honored Bill Superfoot Wallace.
Yeah, we're 11 minutes late. Time. 11 minutes
okay.
late.
Okay, I'm here.
Well, whoever that was, God bless you guys. I'm introducing Hunty Jesse Bowen. Hunty, are you there, sir?
I am, sir. How are you doing?
Well, how are you? We're just a little late tonight, but we're here. Now, how was Las Vegas?
Well, Las Vegas was great, sir. You know, we had a great tribute to Grandmaster Wallace, and, you know, it was a super weekend. We had the Author Expo, and then we had the Presidential Award.
Well,
so
cool.
We had a great weekend.
It sounded like a great weekend, the people I talked to, and, you know, I know it was real hot, but, you know, the main thing is your back. Now, are you recovering? Are you okay?
I'm working on it. I'm working on it. Better and better.
I understand. Well, you know, I tell you what, we got October coming up for Judge Roy Kerman. I guess that's the next big event for the martial art world. But you know what? I'm so glad that Bill's event went well, and the people I talked to, they said they had a great time, got to meet some great people, and you had some heavy hitters there. You had Jeff Smith and Joe Corley and Linda and Steve Park and a bunch of people, so it sounded like you had a great time, and Bill said he had a great time, and you know, anytime we can say thank you to the icons like Bill Wallace, that's really cool. And we want to thank you for all your work you did and your team did to pull that off in Las Vegas. So God bless you, Jeff Bowen. Now,
I appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I've got a very special show tonight. And this man I've known for a long time. And you know what? He's got a cool nickname. It's called Kempo Joe. He is best known as Joe Ribello. Now, Joe, are you there?
Yes, I am, sir.
Well, Joe, we're a little late tonight, but we're here, buddy. How you doing?
Doing great. Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate the honor and the privilege, and hoping to have a great time tonight with all of you.
Well, yo, I'm going to get right into it, Joe. You're a black belt in many styles, and you've got a hell of a reputation for knowledge. But, you know, let me ask you a question. Was you part of the Gracie's organization, too, besides Mr. Parker, or was just one?
Well, I did several different organizations. Again, I was very honored and privileged to know Mr. Parker from 1983 till his untimely passing in 1990. Again, was honored to be a member of the IKKA. Again, since that time, again, presently I'm involved with Kenpo, with an M, International, with Mr. Jorgen Jorgensen, presently from Thailand. We decoratively call Kenpo International the Festivus for the rest of us. For all the diverse styles of Kenpo and Kempo and Kwambop and Chuanfa, and really to give the various practitioners of those styles a centralized database where they can gather together and look at the similarities and differences of their various Kempo-based systems and styles.
Well, you know, now that I'm a little bit older now, you know, that's a joke. I remember all the interviews, it would always come up, Mr. Lee, we know that you're Kyokushin, but you also have a very deep Kempo background. What is the difference between Kempo and all the other styles? And I would say the same answer every time. I said, well, Kempo has all the fundamentals, point A to point B, like Shotokan, Taekwondo, and some other karate styles. But what makes Kempo different? We always teach the animal instinct of surviving, taking that monkey, that crane, that tiger, that snake, and utilizing those animal instincts. And then the dragon, the untamed dragon. No limit to what that dragon is. And that's what they do different. And whoever's in the background, I need to mute your phone, please, so we don't have any background noise.
Hey, sounds like someone's watching.
This is Wolverine. Let me, ladies and gentlemen, if you could, please, if you're not speaking, just place your phones on mute so it cuts down on the background noise. I got a little stronger voice than Professor, so I need you guys to make sure you put that on mute because we want to hear what our guest has got to say, what Mr. Bowen's got to say, what Professor's got to say, and all our panel. So if you could just please do that. We love each and every one of you, and that's why we need everybody to place their phones on mute so we can hear it. All right. Y'all can get back
at
it.
Thank you, Dean.
And I promise, I promise I'm not washing dishes.
Okay. Well, don't you agree about those five animals and that dragon being the untamed or the one that you can't really put a leash on? And that's what makes it so dangerous. That's what makes Kempo so dangerous.
Well, first of all, I mean, it's one of the important ingredients of what makes Kenpo Kenpo. I'm doing an article on what makes Kenpo Kenpo, what separates it from karate. And first of all, you know, predominantly, it is first and foremost a technique-driven art, like jujitsu. Person grabs me, pushes me, punches me, I defend myself. Secondly, again, it's an amalgamation of Chinese kung fu with the various animal styles and essences, Okinawan karate, and scientific street fighting. And, you know, that was a term that Parker utilized and other Kenpo practitioners. It's a technique-driven art. I always say Kenpo, how to rip, gouge, maim, and mutilate for fun and profit. Kenpo makes no apology for what it is. It's
well,
a vicious, violent street fighting art.
Why, Joe? I remember four words. Stop, maim, disable, destroy. Now, Mako, you remember Mako, my old sword instructor? He would say,
sure,
Gary,
Nico, you bet.
You can't, because the way I was taught it was stop, maim, disable, kill. And Mako would go, Gary, you got to soften it up a little bit. Don't use the word kill. Use the word destroy. That's soft a little bit. So even though it means the same thing, stop, maim, disable, destroy, Kion, Kata, Bunkai, Kumite. And you don't need those really four things, or eight things. I can't count anymore. You're not really teaching karate.
You missed an important feature in regards to that, which is waza, right? We say bunkai is the application of the kata. But the difference in the majority, not all, because, you know, I've studied systems like Okinawan Kenpo, and the foundation Okinawan Kenpo is kata, not waza. The waza is built within the kata and the bunkai, the application. But many of the Kenpo styles are based, again, technique-driven art, waza. What person attacked me? What do I do? And because of that combination, there's a wonderful phrase that came from Nakayama Sensei, who wrote Dynamic Karate. And he had studied Kenpo as a Japanese spy during World War II, and then, of course, Shotokan in Japan. And he had a great phrase. He said, karate is a cannon. Boom, one shot destroys everything. He said, Kenpo is a machine gun. It tears apart your opponent. And really, when we look at systems like Mr. Parker's system and the Tracy system, Kara Zenpo Goshin Jutsu, Hawaiian Kenpo, from CHA 3 to Kaju Kenpo, Shaolin Kenpo from Ralph Castro, or Shaolin Kenpo from the Fred Villari lineage. You know, those techniques are all intuitive within that. They're ingrained in what makes
it. Joe, mm-hmm. You're not allowed to say Fred Villari on this station.
Okay, I'm sorry.
He's a 13th degree black belt, last time I heard.
15.
I don't know where he got that from. But he was, I just don't like saying his name because I realize that he's the type of guy that took Kenpo and really embarrassed people. Because claiming to be a 13th degree black belt, how much crap is that?
Well, it's actually 15th at this point, but, you know, this is what I say. You know, Mr. Parker brought Kenpo to this country, but the Tracys franchised it. Again,
but
Walter Godin,
Joe Imperato, and Adrian Imperato with Kaji Kenpo taught people that Kenpo was a very, very adamant self-defense, correct?
Oh, you bet.
I mean, they showed the brutality of what Kenpo was.
Kaju Kenpo added, we don't leave till there's blood on the floor. And that was taken to heart, you know, by many people, through Kaju Kenpo. But also Kenpo as well.
Yeah. One of the things that always brought up in the early
60s, well, yeah, Gary. 70s. Hey, Gary.
Yeah.
You know, the Chinese symbol for martial art was the combination of sword and stop conflict. It wasn't an attack. It had to do with avoiding conflict, not creating conflict.
Right.
So,
right,
Kenpo Joe, what's your take on that?
Well, again, the character, you know, I always jokingly say Wu Bu Mu, right? Wu for Wushu, Bu for Bujutsu.
No, not Wushu. I'm talking about the Chinese character of martial art.
Well, that's what we're talking about.
No, we're talking about the Chinese character, the kanji of martial art. He had to do with stop conflict and sword. And that means you avoid conflict, not create
it. It wasn't sword.
Yes, it was.
The term was
it was avoid conflict.
Hold on. Allow me to elaborate.
Sure.
There are two characters that comprise the character, again, of Wu in Chinese, Bu in Japanese, and Mu in Korean. They consist of two characters. One character is the character for stop. The other character is actually not a character for sword, but one of the earliest Chinese.
It's powers. Exactly sword. It's exactly sword. You're wrong.
It's not. You want to put some money on it?
We differ.
I could use
we
cash.
It means sword. It means sword.
Okay.
The character is what we call a Jew, and I won't discuss it. But again, look it up, and again,
Joe.
But you're right in regards to weapon and stopping, and you're right.
Okay.
It's designed to stop
Joe.
Violence, not promote.
Joe. AJ,
yes.
Wait a minute. I got a question to ask you. In the 60s and the 70s, even in the 80s, people said that Kenpo was a slapping art. Now, I know you can explain that because I did. It's not a slapping art, even though when you saw people do long form 1, 3, 4, whatever, they would slap their gi. That would symbolize grabbing, correct?
Right. So again, the person who wrote that letter to Black Belt Magazine was actually from the Chicago area. And then years later, he visited Lee Westlake School and met with Mr. Parker and actually apologized because he wasn't aware of the application of the quote-unquote simple flat. And again, on level one, it's designed to pin an opponent's grab. Person grabs you, they're in control. You take your hand and you pin their hand to ensure that they do not strike you with that hand and then continue on through the technique. Second of all, the slapping action is designed to coordinate directional harmony, moving the various parts of your body into a particular direction. Third, it's designed to create a check. What separates karate from kenpo? Checks. The ability to bring the other hand in a positional check as you strike with a given action. Another important ingredient is also, you know, the body's 98% water. When we do certain traditional katas and we slap ourselves in the chest as we say do a back knuckle to 9 o'clock or 3 o'clock to our sides, it's designed to drive the different part, including the water or blood within our body, extending out through the energy through our hand to compound that. It's like taking a rock and dropping it in a bucket of water. And the rays, the circular motion and the circular ripples from that rock extend out to the edges of the bucket. And so in a similar fashion, that's yet another reason why we synchronize with a checking action. And it's not limited to the kenpo. Again, we have certain karate kata that we do that, and that's part of our kenpo influence.
To the best of my knowledge, Chuan Fa did never do that.
Chuan Fa always had checks, or at least we would think it had checks. Right. Again, because the Chinese influence. You know, we always had a protecting hand.
Well, I'm saying, to the best of my knowledge, Chuan Fa never did that.
Joe, you got to remember, you're talking to a damn Korean stylist here with AJ. So you can't argue with him.
But AJ, by the same token, okay? And when we talk about Korean art, we talk about Chuan Fa. A perfect example of Chuan Fa is Tang Soo-do. Tang Soo-do has
90%. Don't confuse it. Quan Bop's not Tang Soo-do.
I'm not.
No
what I'm saying is there is. What I'm saying is that Quan Bop is in Tang Soo-do. Tang Soo-do has 90 Hoshin Soul, which in Japanese translates as Ghost in Jutsu, which are self-defense techniques.
Tang Soo-do is more White Crane Kung Fu, actually, started by a woman.
I'm familiar with the history of White Crane. You don't see that much in it in Tang Soo-do, though. Like I said, in the Hoshin Soul of self-defense.
I don't know. I've been doing 50 years. No.
Tang Soo-do, the Hoshin.
Joe, like I said, buddy, you're arguing with a damn Korean stylist.
But Quan Bop is in the art of Tang Soo-do. And you can see that because of the use of back fists, rolling hammer fists, and these ingredients are what constitute Quan Bop or Kenpo or Chuan Fa. And these are the important ingredients.
That's actually Grandmaster Kim Su, who was he's actually in Houston, Texas.
Right. I'm familiar with him.
You can see that more in his art.
You can see that in the World Tang Soo-do Association. I just did a seminar there a little over a year ago demonstrating which techniques from Tang Soo-do they had that originally came from Quan Bop or Chuan Fa or Kenpo. And showed them in different Hawaiian techniques that were influenced.
And then, more importantly,
what constitutes Kenpo.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Joe, listen to me. AJ, listen to me. You mentioned Kim Su.
Yes,
I got to tell you a story. Okay, this is a good one. There was a young kid named Jim McCray, Don Mullins, Skipper Mullins' little brother, and Al Garza. And I'm sitting in Kim Su's studio, and I'm begging him to let us fight in his closed tournament they had in Houston, Texas in the 80s. Now, mind you,
right.
he goes like this. He says, okay, Gary, you're the guy that opened the school down the street from me, aren't you? I said, yes, I'm down from Carl Geis. He says, well, yeah, I'll tell you what. If you come to my school tomorrow night and make it through my blackboard class, we'll let you guys fight in the tournament. So I took Don Mullins.
Oh, sure, I remember this.
Brother,
yeah.
Jeff McRae and myself, and Al Garza didn't show up, but he went and fought in the tournament. And we fought in Kim Sue's school on Long Point, and we had a good time, that's what I'll just say, against all his black belts. And he allowed us to fight in his closed tournament in, I think it was 1983. And Kim Sue, I got put into the Texas Hall of Fame with Kim Sue back in, I think it was 2000.
Oh, he's a great man.
Yeah, he's a great man. Guy. Now, Joe, let me ask you one question again about Kimbo. Now, American Kimbo has gotten a lot of yays and nays through the years because of, they say it's been watered down and everybody's a 10th degree black belt now. And
well, that's a fact.
That. But, you know, the thing about what I find from the old Kimbo guys like Bob White and John Pupubia and all the great Kimbo guys, they still have the same attitude of stop, maim, disable, destroy when they teach self-defense. Now, you have a school. You teach a lot of different arts. What makes the Kimbo that you teach sufficient on the street, Joe?
Well, and see, that's an important key. You know, how many tools do you have in the toolbox? How many letters do you have in your alphabet? You know, are you willing? And, you know, I always say, you know, the beauty of any given Kenpo technique and system is your ability to stop. You can stop at any given point. You don't have to take it to the ultimate. It's nice to know that you can, though. It's nice to know that you have the skills and levels and techniques that can take it to that level. You know, I mean, again, nobody bench presses with their eardrums. You know, nobody's doing curls with their eyeballs, unless they're rolling their eyes, of course. You know, we attack the weak spots of the body, and we make no apologies for it. You know, I mean, it's when we look at, you know, like I said, impractical self-defense. How far are you willing to take it? You know, how far are you willing?
You know,
and again, the beauty
you know
of this
what,
is
Joe,
you don't have to think about it.
Joe, were you a tournament fighter? I can't remember. Were you a tournament fighter back in the day?
No, I fought very little. I fought when I first got my black belt. Matter of fact, the funny thing was the first tournament I ever fought at as a black belt, I'll never forget it. You remember Barbara Nagel from Kenjaxi and Pokelon. So she had moved from Ohio to Massachusetts, and she opened up a tournament called the Battle of the Cape Cod Superstars. And at the time, over half of the top fighters in the country were all from New England. So, you know, I had just gotten my black belt in January of 83. So at the time, she had put in a loser's bracket because, you know, sending the top fighters in from New England, if you lost your first match in the first round, you could be put back in the buy chart, like $5. And I'm like, my first tournament, I figured I'm not going to do that well. I put the $5 in. So I'm talking before the event with Billy Blanks, and I get some couple of pictures taken with Billy. He had moved up from Pennsylvania, was living in Quincy, Mass. Also, Andre Tippett from the Union Patriot. You know, Greg Walraven. There were all these top guys that were all from New England. So I go to fight my first fight, and that year Matt Naska put in the two-point kick. Remember two-point head kick? They put that in to make things, quote-unquote, more exciting.
Well, you know, who invented that? Listen, Joe, who invented that is the man I'm honoring this week, or this October, Roy Curvin. He brought the two-point kick to America. Now, Joe, before you don't go anywhere. We got to do a couple segments, and I'm going to bring you back, and we're going to play the Legends Name Game. This is something Bob White and I invented a few years back, and I'll hit you with a name. I need like 2 minutes, like a fight, 2 minutes to talk about them, yay or nay, and that's how we'll close the show out. So don't go nowhere, okay, buddy? I'll be right back.
I'm here. Thank you.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to the great Kempo Joe, Joe Ribella. And I wanted to say to you, I love my co-host. I didn't get to introduce him the way I normally do, so I am going to do it right now. I got two guys that put up with me and take care of my back. And the first person, he's probably knocking people out right now, but I want to introduce him. He is a NASCAR world champion, and many years ago, he had a great fighter named Joe Lewis. And before Joe passed, he gave me permission to adopt this man. So for the past 10 years, he has been my student. I'm very proud of him. Mr. Dean Pyle. Dean, you there?
Yes, sir. I'm right here.
Well,
hey, Dean.
You know,
hey, bud.
Yeah. Dean, I want to say to you that I appreciate you so much being the host. And, you know, isn't it cool listening to Kempo Joe talking about Kempo?
Oh, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
The other co-host, you know, I make fun of him because he does Korean karate, and that's nothing to make fun of him about. But I love the fact that he puts his two cents in against the Kempo guy. But he's a real master of Tangsudo Karate. He knows knowledge. In fact, on the webpage of the www.sportkaratemuseumarchives.com, he's going to be in the future writing in the House of Korea the history of how Korean karate helped sport karate in America. I'm talking about my friend, my co-host, A.J. Perry. A.J.
Thank you. Thank you for the nice introduction.
You're an animal. You're an animal. I love it. So, ladies and gentlemen, these two gentlemen, Dean Pyle and A.J. Perry, are the best of the best. But, you know, we have a great little segment that we do. It's called 4 Plus 1. Now,
Gary.
Mr. Jerry Smith, yes, sir?
I do judo, too.
Okay. Forgive me, Lord. He does judo, too. Anyway, Jerry Smith is a little under the weather. He was at the hospital when he called me this afternoon, and he's getting checked up. But I'm going to go right into my lady guest, who runs my attitude. I could have chose any lady. I chose her to be on the 4+1. Karen, you there?
I'm here.
What an
I am
interesting
here.
Show, huh?
Whew.
Well, I called you tonight or today, and you were teaching, and I didn't really get to go in depth about our topic tonight, but
okay.
It's real simple. Real simple. The difference of real technique, Karen, or fake technique, is it real or is it memorized? And what I mean by that is, let's say most people that come into a karate studio, they want to learn self-defense. They don't want to learn how to fight tournaments or do competition. They want to defend themselves. Now, it's fair that when they walk in, they learn real self-defense and how to handle the situation that arises, how to handle it when it confronts them, and how to handle it when it's in the middle of things, and how to handle it when it's over. Do you agree on that?
Yes, I do.
Well, in your teaching Kung Fu now and what you're doing, how do you teach differently the Kung Fu techniques from the Karate Shaolin techniques that you taught years ago?
Oh, well, most of them are close enough that if I saw that in a dojo or a kwan, I would still be able to recognize the interchange, you know, getting out of someone holds your hand, grabs your hand, simple movement to get out of that, how to break a choke. how to attack a different area of the body so they let go. Things like that are pretty universal, I would think. But I think it's important that if a technique is not geared for, say, a small young girl against a tall man, you have to adapt them a little bit so that the small girl is not relying on the element of surprise for it to work. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There has to be some techniques that this kid would never use until they got older, but there are universal techniques that work in all situations, and that's what you have to find out what they're looking for and teach them that way.
Well, good point. Well, how's North Carolina? South Carolina, North Carolina.
Right now I'm in New Jersey. I'm visiting my daughters and then going back on Friday. But it's hot there. It's very hot in North Carolina right now.
Well, are you excited about seeing your old friend in October?
I certainly am. I can't wait to get out there and see you. I need a hug.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun this year. You know,
we got
a movie deal, Karen. You know that? MW Films is coming in to film a movie about the museum. We got like 20 vendors this year. So we got a big show, and we're giving some honorary black belts to some very well-known fugitivist people. You know, and we got some really cool things happening besides the regular Tom, Dick, or Harry type stuff. You know, it's not like the other events. And God bless all the events. But the
I could not get the video to play.
Okay,
who's
here we
this?
Go.
Who is this? Who said that?
I think that might have been Jesse Bowen.
Okay. Well, Karen, thank you for your opinion.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I'm moving right along, ladies and gentlemen. Did Tom Selman call in yet? Hey, Tom called me earlier and said he might not be on the show tonight. So how about David Chambers? Are you on, David?
Yes, sir.
Let me introduce you. Ladies and gentlemen, I've known this young man since he was a well, he's not a young man anymore, but I knew him when he was young. I knew him when he was an orange belt. And I had the pleasure back in the day of the NBL and ski to coach him to his first world championship in ski karate underneath the NBL. Now, as we speak, he is the president of the amateur organization of karate, the AOK, the largest martial arts sport association in Texas. That's pretty serious. But what I love bragging about him is that he is a five times, probably more, I only counted up five, Golden Greek winner, the MVP of Techno guys. It took me 17 years to win one. This guy's 0-5. He's an amazing fighter, an amazing instructor. I'm interested to see what he has to say about tonight's topic. D, are you there, buddy?
Yes, sir. I'm right here, sir.
Well, we talked about it a little bit before the show tonight because you're an active teacher, and I know that what you teach has to be real because you're on the north side of Houston, not the nicest place to grow up. So how much of your self-defense that you teach is real or is it Memorex?
I'm not sure what Memorex is, but I had a class.
Well, let me explain.
And I had a
Memorex is a tape. Let me explain. Memorex is a tape that you would record an original, say, song to. So it would be fake. It wouldn't be real. It'd be Memorex. That's what I mean by Memorex. You teach like a sidekick, for instance. You teach it just enough to touch somebody, or you teach it enough where you can go through somebody and break his ribs?
I had a class that they restarted, and if you can actually go look at it live on Facebook. A lot of times we put our classes on Facebook because some of my schools all take classes with me at the same time while we're doing it in different cities. Now, in doing so, I had a person register today, and they asked me the question, well, if you're doing self-defense, why did I put this big old guy on the little lady? She said, she just don't find that to be fair. And I concur with her. I don't think it's fair either. I think it's karate. And my point is that when you're teaching martial arts, I always try to put out there that if you can do anything possible, at the end of the day, is survive. You might not have got first place, but did you survive? When I say survive, when you out there competing, that's true. That's nice. But when you're in real life, the things that you need to do need to be applicable to somebody bigger than you attacking you, somebody stronger than you attacking you, somebody that puts you at a disadvantage because they have weaponry or they have experience. They have something that makes them physically towering over you. And real self-defense can beat those odds. And so when we're teaching class in Northside Karate, our focus is what's the disadvantage? Now, how to survive, how to win anyway. And I've been blessed. So the lady, she watched the class, and I took one of my little four-year-olds, and I said, now, I want you to go up there, and I want you to grab and choke her. Just grab and choke her. Now, she, one of the guys, her husband wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. So I got one of my upper belts to do it. And he put his hand around her throat real fast, and you saw the girl turn red. Now, she choking her. That little girl grabbed that pinky finger and almost snapped it off. Now, you heard the red belt, you know, wailing, but you saw the little four-year-old walk away not only not scathed, not mentally disturbed, because she's accustomed to that type of training. So without a doubt, the training can be real if you desire it to be. It's not always the best way to make money. I make money other ways. But the point of it is the best way to save a child's life. So without a doubt, real karate, Northside Karate, it's the kind of post.
Good point.
Hey, Gary.
Yeah.
I think it's a great segue to Dr. Reginald Lee, because I think his headset and virtual reality, how should I put it, creates an atmosphere where people react naturally, where they don't think about it. All of a sudden, they just react naturally to the situation. I think that's a great segue for
it. AJ. Speaking of the headset, let me introduce, you know, Dee, thank you so much for that comment. I want to introduce the inventor of SetVR, self-defense enhanced training in virtual reality application. Now, if you want to find out what this is about after I introduce him, you can go to Google. That's right, on your computer, and you can see the demo. You'll see the village. You'll see the history journal portal. You'll see the hologram that attacks you. And just type in SETVR.app on Google. With that said, let me introduce the inventor of the virtual reality headset. Well, not the headset, but the application that's put on the headset. Reggie, you there, buddy?
Yes, sir. Good evening. And, AJ, thank you for those comments about SetVR. They're very, very...
Even though well said.
Yeah, well said. Well said in regards to his description about our program.
Well, tell everybody about it a little bit, Reggie.
Okay, I just want to pivot with what AJ had said about the program. It's a program whereby you basically we develop a reflex to your environment. You react when your opponent reacts. So what he does, you react, neutralize, and that's what the program's all about. If you ask anyone about what SetVR is about, I would say that it's a program of self-empowerment to develop a reflex response to neutralize a random, a sudden attack anytime, anywhere, when you want. The other description is that it's compact and portable. It's almost like a simulation program, whereby the programs that you go into the military and also in the police department where they have simulation programs, you can think of it parallels that because it puts you in an environment that is undaunting, unpredictable, and random. We at SetVR continue to be super excited about SetVR, self-defense enhanced training in virtual reality as a platform whereby you can continue to practice your skills in self-defense anytime, anywhere, when you want. The program is compact and portable. You can take it anywhere you travel, and even during a pandemic, to continue to practice your skills in self-defense while practicing social distancing. With the use of an Oculus Quest or Oculus Rift headset, you'll be transported to a virtual reality platform whereby a hologram will confront and attack you when you least expect it with random attacks. The goal of SetVR is to have you to be able to neutralize an attack or threat that is sudden, unpredictable, and random. To improve your skills in evasion through angular, linear, or circular movements. The three basic movements that Sensei Richard Wigginton has always spoke about in regards to our program, moving, angular, linear, and circular, to work around your opponent to neutralize your attack. To avoid, to place you in an opportunity position of an advantage for neutralization as you practice to improve your skills in timing, speed, and accuracy as you develop muscle memory and the goal of developing a reflex response to a threat to neutralize without hesitation. Just like if you place, for example, a metaphor, placing your hand on a hot stove, you don't think about it, you just move reflexively, or if I take a hammer and tap you on your knee, you develop a knee jerk. That's a reflex response. This is a platform where you can continue to practice what you've been taught in your dojos and your schools. The katas inform the program of application against a unpredictable random attack to practice anytime, anywhere, when you want. We will continue to update SetVR in the future to help you to practice to maximize the application of self-defense when you want and where you want. So please continue to visit us at our website at setvr.app. That's SETVR.app. We continue to be proud to endorse Gary Lee and the Sports Karate Museum to be the future platform of his vision of the history portal, for which SetVR has introduced Professor Gary Lee as the wisdom warrior in the history portal demo in the entrance to the history portal. But before meeting the wisdom warrior, one must neutralize the hologram attacker at the gate of the history portal. With that being said, Professor Garley, a few words about your vision of the history portal in virtual reality.
Well, my vision is very simple. I want to be able to teach, educate people on where sport karate was invented and where it came from. So we're starting with a core group, and they're already there. Roy Curran invented the two-point kick and brought it to America. He's there. George Minshew, the first man to award a gold ring in open competition. He's there. Chris Minshew, the first NBL point champion. She's there. Mr. Mike Dillard, the owner of Black Belt Magazine and Century Martial Arts. He's there. And then every month, we're going to be able to add a new History Journal profile so you can do SetVR and work your way into the profiles and learn about sport karate, answers and questions. It's so cool. Reggie, I want to thank you so much for what you do and how you help us. It means so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, our next segment is a fun segment. This man he is better known as Dean Pyles. So his alias is the Wolverine. Means what he says what he means, and he can back it up. Now, every week we take off the leash and we kind of let him kind of go. Well, not crazy, but says what he means. And tonight we have a very special subject, and he's going to talk about it. Wolverine!
See you, or shingle shoe. That means hello, how are you? And Professor, just so you know, I'm actually known more by Wolverine, I think, now than my own name, but it's okay. Mm-hmm. I respond to either one.
Well, tonight's a very simple topic for you, Wolverine. Chasing coattails. You brought it up. You wanted to talk about it. You got 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, first of all, I'd like to say, you know, I'm all about real fighting and practical technique that works. I want to say to start with that the problem with most, self-defense systems, I call it combative systems because I train the military, but is people try to overcomplicate it. So I try to tell people, remember to make your combative tactical, not technical. When you do 57 different moves to get to the point, that's not realistic in a real world. And I'll say this right quick. We're working gun stuff, you know, weapon stuff on base. We'll do that. People that I see a lot of videos, people putting videos out about taking weapons and all that. That's good when it's a, you know, prop gun. But when it's a life or death situation, you have a 99% chance of dying when you reach for that weapon. That's what people don't understand. And a lot of people try to teach all these tricks, and they'll say, yeah, it'll work. But I'm just the type of guy that I don't mind racking a 40 caliber back, and letting you try to snatch it. And if it goes off in your face, then, you know, when it comes down, your motor skills in a life or death situation really slow down. Not that they can't be taken, but just remember, you got to be careful. Coattail riding. My next subject, coattail riding. You know, there's a lot of people out there, they may not have accomplished a lot of stuff, but they try to jump on the coattails of other people. And one thing that I'll say about that is Grandmaster Joe Lewis, he had thousands and thousands of people show up at his seminars and train and take a seminar under him. And then, you know, as soon as he passed away, of course, obviously everybody's a black belt, you know, and that's coattail riding, or they want to claim that they trained with him. And let me just say, there's a difference in training with Grandmaster Lewis and doing a seminar with Grandmaster Lewis. That was two totally different things. A lot of stuff that we worked on in the real world in training never got to seminars. And so what I mean by coattail riding is they want to put themselves around people such as you, Professor, or people that have accomplished a lot of stuff because it makes them feel more important even if they've not accomplished anything. So coattail riders are people you got to really be leery of, because they're the ones that when you're out there, you know, on the grind trying to get things done, they're right there trying to be part of it, even though they're not actually getting out and being part of it, if that makes sense. You know, and a lot of people will do that and then try to use your influence to drop your name or whatever to get favor or look better or make people feel like that they've, you know, been around somebody that's actually worked hard or done something. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir, it does. And I appreciate that, Wolverine, because you're absolutely right. You have to earn every bit of moments you have to be able to pass on the knowledge. Thank you, Wolverine. Thank you for that. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the Wolverine, better known as Dean Pyles. But like he said, he's getting more known as the Wolverine. But anyway, I love him. I love him to death. Let me bring back my special guest. Okay, Joe Kimbo, are you there?
You bet. Yeah, I just want to take a moment and thank everybody for being here and their insights and input. It's a, It's a real joy. And just want to take a moment to thank Jesse Bowen for all his work. You know, I mean, I've got a whole new renaissance because of the various texts that he's put out, whether it be the Masters in Pioneer book all the way through the recent Martial Arts Extraordinaire book. I never thought I'd be in these texts and associated with these individuals. I'm just honored and humbled and privileged to be a part of all that. But please, let's go on.
Well, try to hit you with a couple names before we get off the air. The first one I'll hit you with, first name, yeah, I hope you know, Bob White. You got 2 minutes. You got a minute.
Bob White, incredible person, down to earth, a legacy in the Orange County area in relationship to decades of tournament fighting champions. Again, I have a copy of his brand new book, which I got at the last gathering of Eagles in Miami. He and his wife Barbara, just wonderful people. You know, one of the great compliments you give someone is not only teacher and instructor, but coach. And when you talk about the term coach in a positive light, you got to talk about Bob White. And again, just really dedicated to making each and every student a better person as well as a better martial artist.
I'll make you with an old name, Nick Serio.
Nick Serio, he was the man, again, George Vasari brought Kempo to New England. Nick Serio helped promote it. He was an auto mechanic in Boston who trained with George Vasari and then went on to not only get his black belt from him, he also worked with the AKA and Ernest Lieb and also studied with Fumio Demura and Tadashi Yamashita. He also worked in Kung Fu with Master Fong Chin in Hungar Kung Fu, and incorporated these various aspects to create his own system, Nick Serio's Kenpo. He went on to have many tournament champions. He was very much involved in the early NECRA before it was Crane, the New England Karate Referees Association. Wrote several books, including did a series of videos locally in Rhode Island and also through ESPY TV. Combined Kung Fu, Kenpo, also worked with Glenn Hart and formulated the Nick Serio Kenpo system.
Wow, cool. Well, you know, I want to say thank you, Kenpo Joe, for being on the show tonight and giving our listeners all around the world a little more insight of what Kenpo is. Now, if anybody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they do it, Joe?
Certainly. You can reach me via email at kenpojoe@aol.com, and that's K-E-N, like Barbie and Ken, go to the post office at aol.com. You can also contact me through Facebook at Joe Ribello, as well as my studio, Ribello's Kenpo Karate. You can also contact us on Instagram at kenpojoe_Ribello. We're also on Twitter as well. Again, you can check out our YouTube channel, which is over 175 videos. At Kenpo Joe 1. But if you punch in Kenpo Joe, I always jokingly say, I'm Kenpo Joe, Google me, baby, bing me later. I'm all over the internet. If you can't find me on the net, you're not looking. And it's an honor and a privilege where I can help and assist anyone. You know, the classic phrase is, how can I be of help? How can I be of service? And I hope that I've been that way tonight, Mr. Sevier.
I'm going to do this, Joe. Probably before Christmas, I'm going to call you up, and I want you to give me some pointers how to become famous like you, okay, buddy? And thank you for putting that word.
You know, Gary, if someone had told me 35 years ago that a screen name on AOL would become my nom de plume and the world would know me as Kenpo Joe, I'd have never believed them in a heartbeat. But who knew?
Yeah.
So just happy to be here and helping out.
Well, God bless you, Joe. Thank you for being on the show tonight. Thank you for we missed Uncle Jerry and Tom tonight, but thank you, Karen. Thank you, AJ. Thank you, Dean. Thank you, Dr. Lee. We want to thank Dr. Hanchi Bowen, too, for all he does. And we want to thank you, Joe, for being on the show. And promise me, come back, okay?
Oh, I love being here. It's my second time here. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk a little bit about one of the many arts I do. And besides the Korean comment, I also have my black belt in Taekwondo and Tangsudo. And I just want to make a shout out, since you mentioned that, to the late, great John Gabriel, who was involved with Team Pepsi with Danny Zeno. Also had many numerous champions throughout New England. I was very proud of my training in those given arts in the Korean lineage. But Temple rules, baby.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a great show tonight with Kempo Joe and all my segments, as we say every week, and we mean it from the heart. Mahalo and aloha. Good night,
everybody. Mahalo, everyone.
Aloha mani niki toi.
Danada, hey.
Is someone asleep?